Welcome, all writers and readers. We are finally letting you from under the staircase. This is the Fanfiction Tapes, and I am Dylan, your host for today. And with me, I have...
Demaya, pronouns she, her. I am not giving the intro for once. Or in charge.
Jay, pronouns she, they. I'm back once again. Blue.
And as always, I am our producer, Ian, pronouns he, him.
Good God. Guys, we are ready for this episode today, and we are going to do something quite controversial, I think. A bit spicy, if you would. We are going to talk about J.K. Rowling, Maya's favorite punching bag. And what we are specifically going to do is talk about what we don't like in general about her writing, mainly focusing on Harry Potter, because no one gives a dog's ass about the rest of her works, which are mostly, you know, very cringe.
they're even worse. Yeah. Also, I had no hand in the writing this episode. I was not allowed to write the script. I'm seeing the script for the first time as we're recording, and it's about 740 words.
That's what you get when you let Dylan host an episode.
The last script that I did was 234.
Yeah, and
the pantser versus plotter dichotomy right there.
Indeed.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get on to this first topic here, and just a quick preface. My face is off, and I've prefaced it. We are going to be mainly focusing on her writing. We're not going to go into her cringe-ass political ideology, because we want to focus on the writing, unless it relates directly to, you know, her writing itself.
It will a couple of times.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think these are mostly railings to prevent me from ranting for 20 minutes about her politics, because I will.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, well.
Maybe in the future, if we get like a Patreon or something, we just make like a political version of this for a special thing.
We already get fairly political.
Yeah, but extra political, extra spice, you know. So anyway, I'll bring up the first point I got written down here. Let's just talk about her naming, right? And when I talk about naming, it's not just character names, but it's sort of everything around that as well, location names, especially in her expanded Wizarding World media. You can tell that it's really, oh God, what do I name this? The translate words of magic and like stuff, and that's just it. But of course, we also have many character names, and being very lazy and using stereotypical names, it would be like if every white, you know, we had like John Smith as every white character. You know?
Yeah.
So it's not that it's offensive, but it is offensive, kind of, to pick out that. But also, just in general, it's not very imaginative. It's like, when you have an Irish character, what is their name? If you have, you know, a character of Chinese descent, what is their name? Immediately, she goes for, like, that, which is like, in my mind, I know when these books are written, and the internet is in its infancy, but also libraries are a lot better. So you can go there and you can find out other names. And that is something that I do think we have in the modern time, is we have a lot more understanding of like culture and stuff, of these foreign cultures that we wouldn't have completely been able to understand because of how easy the internet is to use and understand. So we can name things a lot better these days.
Yeah, but counterpoint, I mean, at least with regards to the Irish Seamus Finnegan.
Yeah, I was going to say that one is...
United Kingdom, she had some pretty easy access to Ireland and Irish sources from there, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. That is, like, completely true. It's like, sure, I can let you get away with, like, anything off the British Isles, but Ireland is right there.
Also, the internet. And, January 1st, 1983 is considered the official birthday of the internet, according to University System of Georgia. And according to Wikipedia, Book 1 was published 26th of June, 1997.
Yeah.
Yeah, but only like the four richest kings of Europe had a computer back then. No, but it's a different sort of thing of how widely, you know, we have phones that can use the internet now and like things.
Libraries did still exist.
I will play devil's advocate here, as much as I despise Rowling. In a way, it kind of almost makes sense. I mean, look at the names of colleges, which is, in my opinion, something roughly equivalent to Hogwarts. At least, currently. You have names like Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, really? She should have then put place name as well as magic in school and translate it. And I mean, academics are kind of like that. We're just shit at naming things. Colorado School of Mines. Indiana University. Yeah. Et cetera, et cetera.
When you do think about like the most iconic, you know, like named like institutions, usually it's like, you know, if you think about like Oxford or Cambridge, that's just where they are. Mm-hmm. They just happen to have good names. You know, thanks whatever Anglo named that back how many ever 10 centuries ago or whatever.
Yeah, like, thank you for like naming. I was Oxford. Trying to think of schools I know of, or you know, have really engaged much with where, that I know are something other than place name school, basically. Which my university, my undergrad institution, is a place name school. And I mean, really the only one I can think of off the top of my head is like Purdue.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, like, it's boring as shit and a little offensive.
Hmm.
But she's not that far off of the real world mark.
Yeah, I think the problem comes from with their flashes of like inspiration. And it's like, well, you clearly bothered here, and then other aspects you lazily filled in. You know, when you look at stuff like the naming of Hogwarts, even, Hogwarts isn't a location, that is a completely original name for this school that you've made up. And while it's kind of like, if you look at it in like just a very literal sense, if you're like, I don't care about Harry Potter and what it means, Hogwarts is a dumb name. But
yeah, it works. It's not a name I would ever call something, because why would I name something after the warts on a hog?
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I feel like she may have been leaning into stereotypes about English people there, because there is a lot of stereotyping around weird place names in England for Anglophones outside of England.
I mean, it is quite true, actually. There are small English towns that no one's heard of that have weird names. It is true. There are a lot of places like that. But I think the Hogwarts idea is actually, you know, I think it becomes more into like sort of that witch idea, if I were to guess. It's sort of, like wart is something you could generally associate with a classic way of a witch's thought of, I think, a lot of media portrayals of witch, and that's like one aspect, school of wizards and witchery or whatever, witchcraft and wizardry. And I think that's the aspect where that comes from. I think Hog is just like, this fits. By the way, it was funny, when I was young, there was a big flooding somewhere, and the national news reported on the flood, and the name of the town that was severely hit, terrible tragedy, you know, was Cockermouth.
Wow.
So yeah, Hogwarts, not that bad. The real thing is wilder, you know.
Yeah.
But I do think when it does come to character names, I do think we do have, like...
Oh yeah, when it comes to character names, it is a... We have a baseball bat with nails in it to whack her with.
Yeah.
See, Seamus Finnegan.
Yeah, you just look at, like, these characters and go, okay, you just went for, like, here is some of the most popular names of this sort of area, and those work. I'll slap them in.
Hmm. And then you have the, you know, egregious mistake of two last names.
Yes.
For one character.
Yes.
Which character is that?
Cho Chang.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't even research how their names worked. You just slapped it on a character and said, hey.
Yeah, it's something that, once again, you had a library. You could find out how Japanese and Chinese and whatever, you know, even like some European names are different. Like if you talk like about Swedish names or like, you know, a lot of Scandinavian names, you can do research. That was one of the things when I started watching more anime, and it's like, oh yeah, they use like the family name more, you know, the surname. That'll be, and it's also the way, it was when I started watching wrestling, and like, you know, you refer to you read about these wrestlers online, and then you hear the ring announcer, and he's like, he said that backwards. That's just how they do it, I guess.
Yep, that's about right.
Yeah. Let me get on to my second point, and this is one I feel kind of strongly about. So, the ending of Harry Potter, I think, is the most plain toast ending of something I've ever seen.
You're not incorrect.
It's white bread, it's plain toast. There's no butter, there's no jam, there's no cheese even.
Yeah. And they all lived happy ever after, but worse somehow.
Yeah.
Because there's character development and changes and things that happen that the audience never gets to see.
Yep.
Yeah, so the ending, most of the characters you know, you know, it's however many years later, everyone is in a completely heterosexual relationship with their high school sweetheart and has 1 to 3 kids.
It's a very nuclear family ending.
Yeah, and I think this is where we can bring in the politics and poke J.K. Rowling with it, because there's also... There's never a change to the status quo.
Mm-mm.
Yes.
The bad guys are the ones trying to change the way things are, and the good guys are the ones keeping it the way it is.
Yeah, and...
And I don't know about you, but I don't know pretty much anyone that actually agrees that the way things currently are is great and perfect. Like, things can always be better. That's the nature of reality, is that you can never be perfect. So you can always strive to be better. And that kind of, from what I understand, is informed by her political beliefs. And that she's just kind of a wet blanket.
Yeah. Her political beliefs are basically the status quo is fine, and like, being reductive is bad. But progressivism isn't something you fight for. It's just something that happens over time, I think, is like her idea. Things will just naturally get better over time. You just have to try and maintain the status quo. But what she doesn't understand is, like, people are the ones who progress, who force the progression. Like, I think that's, like, the dissonance here is, like, she's like, things used to suck, and then they got better. And that... Yeah, but in her mind, I feel like it's more of a, oh, this was just a natural rule that things progress as time goes on. It's like, no, it's people and ideas and people using those ideas that force in progression.
Yep.
It's like, oh yeah, we defeated the fascist wizards and then progress happened and everything got better. But it's like, well... No one did anything, though. And it really does come with that, and it's like, oh yeah, what do our main characters, our golden trio, per se, what do they get up to? Well, two of them becomes cops. One of them stops being a cop to help his brother run his independent business. And the other one becomes the wizarding prime minister.
Yep, and nothing changes.
Yeah.
The government. Like, they're in the government and nothing changes, at least not visibly.
Yeah. And it's sort of weird because I also. Do we. Like, I've watched the movies, I've listened to like half the books because, you know. But do we understand? Is the Wizarding World a democracy?
I mean, it's like kind of implied by some of the names of titles as those are traditionally used for democratically elected positions, but I don't recall it ever being mentioned. Now, granted, it has been a long time since I read the books or watched the movies, because it had already been a long time when I realized I was trans, and then that kind of made the whole area touchy for me, as it were.
Yeah. But essentially, I think it does come down to a bit of the world-building sense as well. It's like, when you do introduce, like, a political system, and that political system is a very half-baked idea, and that's why I feel like the Ministry of Magic is, in a lot of ways, is that it's like, okay, what are the factions here? We know we have the Death Eaters, and, like, they sort of,
it's
like,
the Shadow Government faction. That's what it's the deep state. That's what the Ministry of Magic is. It's the deep state, clearly.
But it's like, clearly Dumbledore is meant to be like this more progressive guy. The Ministry is meant to be like these centrists, and the Death Eaters are meant to be like these radical, weirdo fucking fascists. But like, when the progressives, because that's what happens is like, are perceived progressives get in over the establishment at the end, but then they do nothing different from the centrists besides acknowledge it, besides going, yeah, these fascists were bad, where the other ones weren't. These fascists are bad, and we kind of just, that's all in the past, though. And our character endings also just be like, Harry becomes a cop and has a couple of kids, becomes like police commissioner. It's like, like, this is, in my mind, I just don't feel like for the character of Harry Potter that makes sense.
Did he just spend the entire final book getting disillusioned with the Aurors and the Ministry? The entire final book?
And also, just like, in my mind, wouldn't Harry want something to do with Hogwarts? Like, don't you guys agree?
Like, a series where a character who is ostensibly supposed to be a good person goes and becomes a cop at the end is just, that's just a bad ending. It's an unsatisfying, narratively incoherent ending. If this character is supposed to be a good person, then why the f*** did they become a cop?
Yep.
Well, we have to remember, like, in J.K. Rowling's mind, police are virtuous. Kind of. But even at that, it's like, oh yeah, at the end of the story, Harry became a fireman or a doctor. Like, those are both positions that are far, you know, less disliked. But still, it's unsatisfactory. Oh yeah, I worked for the public service. I don't feel that fits Harry Potter. Like, in the end, I thought, like, this guy's gonna be, like, I don't know, Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, maybe?
Yeah, that...
Yeah.
He literally becomes a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, Renegade Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher in one of the books. Because
that just would make out of so much more sense.
Having an incompetent teacher.
And also having him be, like, the first guy to be able to hold down that position is also, like, thematically, because Voldemort was the one who put the curse on it, I believe.
Also, so, like, you know, when you become an instructor out of being annoyed at the incompetence of your current instructor, you just end up being an instructor. I hate to break it to you, but that's the path you set yourself on. I may or may not be speaking from experience.
I see in the script here that you're saying that Rowling avoided this ending because she thought it would have been too obvious.
I think
I think we've talked before several times about writers avoiding the obvious thing because they feel like that it being obvious is bad. So, once again, take this as an example, listeners. The obvious thing is not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I...
Yeah, doing the obvious thing is honestly sometimes narratively where the story should progress. Like, instead of this cognitive dissonance between the reader and us having discussion like this, right it's here, al- right
it's
now.
It's also about narrative satisfaction. Having the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher is, like, usually in the book, like, the second or third most important thing in that book.
And they always die or change position. You know, like, they never stick in the position.
Yeah, so having Harry take like, that...
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
And wouldn't that be, like, the perfect proof of things actually changing and everything actually coming full circle, Harry having been the Defense Against Dark Arts teacher for long term? Like...
Yeah, like...
That's an actual signal that something has, like, actually changed, as opposed to, you know, Neville being an herbology teacher. And, you know, that's kind of... I've had my own problems with that. Like, I get it, but at the same time, we just had Neville come into his own in the seventh book, and then you kind of shunt him into a largely forgotten position.
Yeah, I think it's mostly that these character endings are not satisfactory because the way the world is built, it's like, what do they go on to do? Well, they go on to work a day job.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I understand that, you know, at the end of the day, most everyone does. Yeah. In a setting where, you know, you're in the real world, yeah, you kind of do need to, at the end of the day, go work a day job. Or just stay in school forever and don't have that problem.
Yeah.
I don't feel like Neville becoming the herbology teacher is that much of a disappointment compared to Harry becoming a cop.
I mean, well, also not that makes sense.
No.
If I'm remembering correctly, it basically was the only subject where he was ever any good and felt any confidence in himself and his abilities.
Yeah, like he did repeatedly demonstrate enjoyment of the area.
It makes sense for the character. It makes sense narratively. It's mentioned completely off screen. I think that's my big problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue with all of this, is the character development happens off screen. I think it is mentioned, actually. I think it is mentioned in the ending. Yeah, because I wouldn't have looked that up, and I remember it, so.
The problem is with, like, a lot of character endings and stuff around that period, it's like, is this Pottermore or is this epilogue? Because
it's been a while, and I was on Pottermore as a kid, so.
Both of those are bad. another thing I just want to note, really, is, I think we might get into it a little bit later, so I'll leave you know. But let's go into killing characters. Stuff I want to praise Rowling for.
30 minutes already.
Yeah. Stuff I want to praise Rowling for is I actually think she killed characters off quite effectively in most of the books. I think the good sense of, like, raising of stakes, whatever, you know, I think it works out well. Characters go when you're like, yeah, makes sense. This has elevated the situation, whatever. You know, especially going Cedric, Sirius, Dumbledore. I think that works fine. The last book is where she makes amateur mistakes, which is you kill characters off for the sake of it.
Yeah,
to make people sad.
Yeah.
It's been a while, but didn't, like, Molly Weasley kill Bellatrix Lestrange?
Yes. Because Bellatrix tried to kill Ginny.
I mean, like, needless deaths can have a purpose if you're, like, trying to illustrate, like, the horrors of, like, war. I actually think Ruby actually does this very well, but that's a completely different discussion.
Okay, so I'm going to agree and disagree with you here. Yes, there are quote-unquote meaningless deaths, but they cannot be narratively meaningless, because then that feels off. They need to be narratively important, but characters can die for reasons that seem to the characters, and within the, like, without Watsonian justification, necessarily. There needs to be a Doyleist one.
That's kind of my point, yeah.
In the last book, we lose, like, so many characters And
for what?
Yeah, it's like people go, oh,
cut down on the cast bloat.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they killed one of the Weasley twins. It's like, yeah, what does that mean? It doesn't change the story at all whether he was alive or dead. The only thing it changes is like whether I am sad about the fact he is dead or not. Like, yeah. It doesn't change the final narrative, and that's a lot of the deaths in, like, that final battle, even the final book. Like, sort of Dobby dying, does it change, like, what they would have done? Like, or is really? It's just a death to make people go, oh no, my character, this cute character.
Yeah, I mean, like, tragedy is fine, it's a war, but, like, you've killed so many people for what? Yeah, and you don't even have it affect the characters after the fact, because the narrative basically just ends when the war ends, and then you go into the epilogue.
Yeah,
we don't see the characters cope with those deaths, really.
And the ones I want to compare it to is like Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. The final battle is like insane. But only
I haven't watched it yet, mind you.
Oh, no spoilers.
I'll just say the number. Three characters die, but each character that dies has such narrative importance and meaning to like the other characters, and it changes like how things go on from that point.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison, like I look at the characters who die, here it's like, oh, the camera kid. Ron's ex-girlfriend, of Ron's brothers.
Wait, the camera kid?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Colin Creevy.
Right! Yeah, I didn't even remember this kid.
Yeah, and
The point has been made!
And then they kill off Lupin and Tonks as well, because Harry, I guess, he can't have any happiness.
No, he can't have any happiness. The Lupin and Tonks relationship development is another gripe that I have with her writing. Yeah.
quick aside, romance and Rowling, dog. Absolute dog. This woman cannot write a romance, teenage or otherwise, to save her life. She's worse a teenage. Her adult ones are not much better. You know, you got Snape acting like Minister Frollo and people being like, oh, he's so heroic, though.
Oh, God. I could go on about this whole thing of Snape and the cult of Snape.
Yeah. But anyway, Rowling's rule in the last book, which is it's such a big shame, because it's like, this is you clearly just have a big blind spot here. Don't kill characters just to have people be sad or be like, well, it's a battle, people have to die. Like, no one goes, you know why Lord of the Rings sucks? Not enough named characters died near the end. It's like, no, you just have the people who need to die for the narrative. Don't just kill off randos for the sake of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did anyone go, I can't believe this story is so different, whether Colin Creevy dies or not? No. You just killed him because you wanted a body count and for a couple of people to go, aw.
Most people don't even remember Colin Creevy, obviously.
Yeah. Okay, now, of course, we've talked about this before and sort of like how, in general, the Wizarding World does not change. Voldemort is gone, but it doesn't really change anything. Like, a lot of, even like, some of Voldemort's followers get off because, oh, they turned at the last second, which is very, I don't want to say Nazi Germany of Rowling. Like, you know, oh, these scientists who did
Operation Paperclip. All
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, we need them.
Yeah.
They're not all, you know, they did terrible things, but come on, guys. We've won, you know. We'll punish the very bad ones.
I mean,
right, though.
Like, I would like to see, so, I like redemption arcs, this is a known quantity about me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know what, I can understand having the good guys be, alright, yeah, sure, you were a terrible person, but you weren't just a terrible person to be a terrible person. Like, Draco was that way because he was raised in that environment, for example. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, he did a lot of shit, but he wouldn't have done that had he not primarily been provided with years of this is the way it is.
Indoctrination, brainwashing, you know.
Racism is learned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is taught. It is not something innate.
But yeah, we don't really see, like, what changes happen. And one of the weirdest things is, it's sort of brought up, I've seen it mentioned before, is how they acknowledge, like, one of the biggest flaws about Hogwarts is they sort 11-year-olds into these personality-based houses and how that formed division. Especially when one of said houses is the bad guy house.
Yeah.
And people in world acknowledge, you know, full of bad guys, isn't it? And
I mean, yeah.
I think there could have been interesting things done with that, but it's Rowling. That wasn't going to happen.
And like, all people will point out, oh, but here are, like, one or two examples of people who don't necessarily fit the perceived archetype of the house, who are a little bit different and got a little bit of nuance. It's like, so
wow.
You make one nuanced character and suddenly everything's okay.
Yeah.
And the reason why I bring it up is because in the book, it's acknowledged that they say, well, sometimes I think we sort them too soon. And it's like, yeah, maybe you do. Maybe it would help.
Maybe if it
helped if you wait till the third or fourth year to put these kids in houses.
I mean, that's a thing that schools do, too. Like,
yeah, I learned not too long ago that, yeah, that's just a thing schools do, which is so weird to me. That was never something that's been done for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I had houses. But, like,
yeah,
I mean, I didn't have houses, but, like, in my high school, there were, like, pathways that people were going through once you reached freshman year. But even then, we were 15, 14, 15.
I mean, our houses were only, like, relevant, like, two times a year, which is sports day. Mm-hmm. And in Wales, we have the Eisteddfod, which is, like, singing, writing, creative arts. It's that version of sports day. You guys should adopt that, because nerds need a sports day too. get a nice step of odd.
Yeah, it's, nerds it's need a sports pompous. Day. I want children to be able to build trebuchets. I think this would be a good and enriching activity.
You could make an art trebuchet. I think they take that, yeah.
Well, actually I made, with my dad, a PVC trebuchet when I was younger. That's why I said that. It was great fun.
All right, so yeah, and also, once again, just sort of ending on, like, we see Rowling's idea of, like, being reductive is bad, but maintaining the status quo is good. Like, especially with the House Elves plot and Hermione being mocked for trying to be progressive and changing an established rule.
Yep.
Like, I think that says a lot about Rowling, how it's like, oh yeah, we should mock progressives for wanting to change things.
Yeah, that one was a real bad look on Rowling's part. Like,
because it's like, what are you trying to say here? Either you're saying, like, 99% of my characters are dumb and, like, conservative, or Hermione is dumb for wanting to be progressive. Either which is bad.
What she's saying is that she's saying the South was right. I mean, she's literally saying the arguments that were used by the American South to justify slavery. It's good for the House Elves. She's saying, oh, they like it, actually. And the ones who don't are just weird outliers.
Yeah.
That's literally what the American South was saying, bestie.
Yep.
Yeah. Swiftly moving on. Let's talk about Pottermore and why it sucks. This is where we get into something different about writing, which is, I don't mind you clarifying things about your narrative or telling me, like, a little sprinkle of what came after, or as many authors would say, I think this would happen. Like, I think that's very important when you're an author and you're talking about things that happen after you are written. You talk, well, I'm not making this decision. I'm just thinking of what would happen in world based on what I know of these characters I made and whatever.
Oh, way too many authors just straight up say shit, though.
Yeah, like, this happened. It's like, no, you don't get... Like, it's your work, but you shouldn't say it like that. It's like,
more authors need the response of Rafo.
Yeah, I know Veronica Roth did this and actually had to take that statement back because people got so angry about the thing that she said about her world.
But Rowling just spits out crap.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of the world building that's in the books is not necessarily super well thought out.
Yeah, and
the world building is very inconsistent, and especially on, like, matters of scale.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Okay, so the Wizarding Society is supposed to be hidden, and there's a lot of aspects to it that make it feel small, and then you run into these things that make it seem like, oh, no, the wizarding world is just as big as the muggle world. It's just somehow ignored.
No. Like, think about this. Like, I went to a school of 11 to 18-year-olds. After 17 and 18-year-olds, they were less of because you stop having to go to school. You can go to, like, college or start working. But there were about 1,000 people in my small town. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a Welsh school, so there's even less people. There's, like, I want to say there's, like... We see the tables, and those tables in the Great Hall, what do you think, said like 200 kids per house?
Yeah.
I'm just guesstimating.
No, I'd say that's about right.
So, like, we're talking about, like, Ginny, I think, is the only girl in her year in Gryffindor.
The only one that we know of.
Yeah.
I mean, what, her best friend is a similar yeared Ravenclaw?
Yeah.
So.
Like, we know there's, like, what, like, 8 or 9 kids in Gryffindor in Harry's year?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we say, like, that there's, like, 30 kids across each, like, in a year, like, you're only getting, like, a couple hundred people, and you're saying that's all the wizards in Britain?
I mean, they did say that this is like what was born to like parents who survived like Voldemort's Great War. I do remember her saying that. I don't remember if it was on the website or not.
Sure.
That was a thing that was said. So apparently, their year is technically smaller than it should be.
Yeah, but
the thing is that amount of people would make sense for a hidden society, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Quidditch World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay, so it would make sense if, like, there were quite a few schools of the size of Hogwarts in an area the size of Britain. Right? You could then pretty quickly scale that. Because, you know... What, like, probably what percentage of people watch sports?
I think, like, the World Cup gets, like, 1 billion. Like, the World Cup final, I think, is, like,
somewhere in
billions. So one in eight.
The world population is 1 billion now. And sports stadiums can usually hold, I think, it's pretty common for them to be, like, up to 50,000.
I say them, like, probably about 40, because, like, I know, at least in the UK, it's, like, they are, I'd say, like, most are probably in, like, that 30 to 40 range, but there are some bigger and there are some obviously smaller. So I'd say about 40,000, you know.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to go with 70,000 because that's the capacity of the nearby American football stadium. Is honestly kind of my rough mental. That looks about the same size. And I'm doing a very half-assed Fermi estimation. So that would imply, to fill that stadium, that there are roughly 560,000 magic nerds worldwide.
You're not wrong, I don't think.
Hold up. What's...
It's getting more popular, though, so that might be an outdated number.
But I do get what you're saying.
How it's getting more popular when the game is hell-bent on ruining itself, I will never know.
Oh, no, no. I'm saying, like, wizards.
Oh. Never mind. You just got that.
So, 560,000, which, actually...
Well, for a secret society.
Yeah, that's not bad, but that's also assuming that the, I mean, honestly, I should stop doing math on air. For me, estimations are cool, but this is a shitty one.
But then you have to say, okay, 1 in 8 of those are fans of the sport, and then also... Than when and attended.
Yeah, well, that's assuming a 70,000 attendance at the Quidditch World Cup, and that 1 in 8 wizards actually will attend that. And I mean, given that it's presumably easier and cheaper than it is to go to
corporate World Cups,
regular World Cup finals, or similar events, the price of hockey tickets today.
But at the same time, even the Weasleys couldn't have, like, made it without winning the lottery, I believe.
Yeah, but Weasleys are, like poverty poor.
I know they are, but, like...
Get own their house.
You are... There are wizards who are poverty poor is the point here. So, like, it's assuming everyone can actually, like, attend the World Cup.
Although that could perhaps factor into the 7 of 8 that don't, right? Because part of the 1 out of 8 watching the World Cup finals for soccer
would be math.
Okay, let's move on. We're getting distracted.
Yeah, we're getting bogged down in numbers. So, you know, once again, this is based in the 90s, but also wizards seem like very technologically illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. It's like, okay, so you have a secret society, but you also cut yourself off from, like...
Have you not figured out how to magically, like, firewall your Wi-Fi?
Or do... I mean, the thing for me is they have all these amazing fire spells and nobody invented a goddamn steam engine. What? Mm-hmm.
I just think it's really weird, and once again, it does go back to what Ian said, how we're trying to present them as equal societies, because it's like, why do you have to hide then? Why aren't you just fully integrated? Like, what is this weirdness here? Like, if you're equal or greater than the human population, why does the human population control the general world then? Aren't you worried about climate change, wizards?
Yeah.
No.
There's that in there.
You don't need fossil fuels. Anyway, but that's just like, in general, the world building doesn't work with like, I don't know, maybe Harry Potter would have been better if it was just a full-blown fantasy instead of fantasy in normal world. I don't know.
Well, okay, no. There's...
The Dresden Files addresses this, actually.
The Dresden Files, Percy Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the justification for Rowling is that the access to the power that wizards have makes them lazy. And only, like, eccentric academics like Mr. Weasley really dig into technology. I think that's probably, like, the Doyleist kind of explanation why Rowling went that way. And it does also, like, the separation of magic and technology in urban fantasy is, it's very standard. It's been that way for a long time. I think the only one that comes to mind from what I've read of urban fantasy that does that, that doesn't do that, is American Gods by Neil Gaiman.
Ah, yeah.
Because I'm pretty certain there's characters in there running around with RPGs and helicopters.
As you do.
I want to say RPG 40. I don't think.
It's been a minute since I've read the book, but isn't there also, like, literally a nascent god of technology?
I don't remember that part, but a notable Swiss cheese brand is notable.
But we've got through that one generally quick. It's all, like, acknowledging, like...
And the reason that I brought up Dresden Files is because you mentioned, why are the Muggles in control instead of the wizards? In the Dresden Files, that's because... there's literally so many Muggles that they can overpower the wizards if the wizards ever get uppity.
But the Dresden Files explanation is the common man is a nuclear f***ing weapon.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they have nukes.
The problem is, going on to our next point, let's talk about the weird potions and how these have weird implications, Rowling.
I mean, I'm... fine with most of them. Like you mentioned in the script that truth-telling potions can be insanely poisonous if not prepared correctly. I'm actually kind of a fan of that, of having the ability to have, okay, things where you can narratively require someone to tell the truth, but also explain away why this isn't used very often. Because it's difficult as shit to do right. Like, that's why you generally shouldn't have pufferfish, because it's difficult to prepare safely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an example of something that Rowling almost never does very well, which is time to say turner. Explaining yeah, exactly, time turner, polyjuice potions, animagus stuff, and that's a whole nother can of worms. She just wants to introduce something and have it used as a one-off, and okay, that's great. That's fine. But you gotta actually, like, talk about why. You can't just...
I mean, I believe in all of them, it's the same reasoning, that it's incredibly hard to do. Like, you have to carry a mandrake leaf under your tongue for, like, a whole ass month to become an animagus or something.
That's not that hard. Bitch talk. time turners, you get one from the government? Yeah, okay, but, like, there's a lot of things that, like, you're supposed to get from the government, but people can make on their own independently with enough resources and time. See, nuclear reactors.
It's also hilarious that Rowling immediately went, okay, let's get rid of the time turners, it's only a one-time thing. And then immediately, once she let go of the series, people were like, yes, we're going to use time turners in this play that even Harry Potter fans despise.
Oh, God, yeah. I don't consider it fucking canon. Like,
it's,
The first thing they did was bring back the thing that Rowling abandoned, because even she realized, I don't want to become, like, a time travel thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's another thing, like, they don't really acknowledge that beyond, like, a couple of scenes, that there is a f***ing wizarding black market.
Speaking of wizards
we don't really acknowledge Nocturne Alley, except when it's, like, narratively, like, not even, like, narratively necessary, like, things just happen to happen in Nocturne Alley, and the fact that it exists is never really touched on for any reason.
Speaking of words being weird and cringe, let's talk about love potions. Why is this date rape drug?
I noticed you've got the word borderline in the script there, but there's nothing borderline about
it. Right about it.
I mean,
no.
Like, it is, it is explicit in the text that the only reason that Voldemort exists is because his mother used love potions on his father, and as soon as he wasn't under the influence anymore,
he booked it. Yeah.
Yep.
But also, we see, like, oh yeah, these teenagers are able to also purchase some.
Right.
I mean,
the whole thing with Ramil Devane, just, oh my god.
That's not unrealistic.
Why are these on the market?
Why are they sold in a joke shop?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
it's not unrealistic. It's that it's easy to get.
Yeah.
Like, without going into, like, well, the wizarding black market.
Yeah, like, this is not an illegal substance. This is just something you buy. It's like, oh yeah, I'll get the Mounding Dew, the chips, and the love potion, please, sir. What?
Imagine if you could walk into Spencer's Gifts and buy Rohypnol.
Yeah, no, that's actually pretty accurate in terms of, like, comparison.
Like, I just don't think, like, love potions are treated, like, with a seriousness.
I mean, chloroform's not that hard to get your hands on, but that's a little...
Yeah, that's a little different.
A little harder to apply.
And also, a love potion is explicitly created to make people fall in love with other people pretty much unwillingly. Mm-hmm. Why else would it exist?
Yep.
The Wizarding World says, like, it's okay to drug your partner into loving you. What an amazing message. Except when it's
not. I mean,
not.
With everything Except else we know about the Wizarding World, like...
Hang on, I just noticed something here. Can y'all think of any other examples of someone actually being depicted under the influence of a love potion other than... Voldemort's father, and I think
Ron? ate bonbons literally, that were like love potion meant for Harry.
Yeah,
literal, yeah. Just fucking.
So I'm noticing that she's depicting it only being used on men by women.
Yeah, which also, what does this mean? What was she cooking?
Well, I mean, also, you'll notice in the... Yeah,
that's what I'm
you'll
asking.
You'll notice in the movie, even, the only people looking at the love potions are the girls gathered around the... Weasley. Yeah.
This actually makes a lot of sense in that when we talk about Rowling's feminism, in that it's specifically... It's not feminism at all. She's a TERF, which is a term that they came up with. They now complain when we call them this. Trans exclusionary radical feminist. They're not feminists. Radical feminists are not actual feminists. They're just conservatives in a beaver suit. And I don't know why I said it like that, but it's just gender essentialism. It's that all things that are women are good and cool, and all things that are men are bad and evil. And that's, I mean, talk about being reductive.
Yeah.
But in the narrative, love potions are never used positively.
No,
they're not. Both instances, they are very negative.
Yeah.
So, what are you trying to say? Why introduce it? You're weird, Rowling.
Yeah. And also, I still don't like the fact that the Weasley twins were trying to sell it to their sister.
Let's talk about a cringe-ass character, Ginny Weasley. Cringe.
Okay, anyway. Now, I mean, I love her, but I love the concept of her, and I think that Rowling did her absolutely no justice.
I mean, it's Rowling. She's not doing anyone justice.
Let's talk about more about world building and how these schools make no sense. So these schools are... So you have one that covers Britain, one that covers all of North America. We have one that covers Western Europe, one that covers Northern and Eastern Europe. We have one that covers all of Africa, one that covers all of South America, a Russia one, and a Japan one. Not even Asia. It only covers Japan.
God, that one would be fucking hate crime central. Especially historically speaking, because historically... The populations in Japan, China, and Korea have not gotten along very well.
That's why it only covers Japanese people, which does make you question... Okay,
Wait, so what happens to any wizards born in China or Korea or Vietnam or Cambodia or Laos or so on and so on?
There are no wizarding schools that cover China or India.
Which are... those are the two most populous countries in the world, right?
Yeah, they have, like... nearly 3 billion people between them.
Beat rattling with a stick. Beat rattling with a stick.
Also, one wizarding school for all of North America. So you're putting Americans, Mexicans, and Canadians together.
And yeah? Caribbeans.
And, you know, Central America.
Yeah, like, what I would do, if I were putting magic schools in the Americas, is the U.S. would probably have, like, at least 4, just because cultural differences would lead to that. Canada yep. would have no fewer than 2, probably more mm-hmm. than that. Especially because the U.S. and Canada are so wide that, like,
yeah.
you're gonna get folks who don't want to move to the other side of the continent.
They can just evaporate, though. They can just disapparate.
Okay, but you can't apparate until you're 17 unless, you know, Americans do it differently, which is never specified.
Yeah. It's a fan.
And it's also incredibly dangerous to do so.
Wouldn't be surprising, considering.
Mind you.
It's also the thing that Renly Mulligan said is like, why are owls used as a primary message in service when they.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, because you can't evaporate onto Hogwarts. Why are we using the bylaws of one school to determine how we message each other?
Well, I mean, if it's like a magic firewall type thing, I could see how that could influence, especially given that, from a dualistic perspective, the world started with Hogwarts and everywhere else came after. Right? It needed to work for Hogwarts, and then just that kind of was how it worked for everyone else.
But, yeah, just looking at it, it's like, okay, we've got Japan. One for all of Africa?
Yeah.
Africa is the second largest continent.
And again, what I mentioned with the Americas, that would be...
The third most populous country on Earth after China and India is Nigeria.
And then you have pretty much, you know... What you're going to do, like, when you're in, like, the 1980s and you've got to invite a bunch of Afrikaans into this place, or, like, mm-hmm. like looking at it, you have Muslim-majority countries versus Christian countries as well. Like, it's like Rowling doesn't understand, like, culture.
So, no. Just doing, well, like, a quick... 30-second search. There are over 3,000 languages spoken in Africa, according to Boston University. What the f- kind of school could accommodate that?
Right.
You have to... I mean, already most schools just, at least in my experience with schooling, they just kind of pick one language and teach in that. And if you don't speak that language... Sucks to be you.
Yeah, and then we look at the fact that, like, Rowling completely ignores, like, political implications of our real world. Because she just believes, like, okay, wizarding society is more important than your nationality. Which is really weird, I think.
It's weird, but I can see it happening.
Sure. That,
right, I mean, look at how the... American Civil War happened, right? It happened because people were more loyal to their own insular societies, the individual state they lived in, than they were to the theoretical nation they were actually a citizen of. As well as, you know, also the slavery thing, but that's why people sided with the South, rather than going, nah, fuck that, filthy traitor.
Yeah, the moral question wasn't as important as, I live here.
Yeah.
And with wizarding society being so isolated, I could see that happening with, you know, folks that are grown and born up in that. But of course, with muggle-born wizards who basically just went from being a normal person to all of a sudden a member of the secret society who still have ties and connections to regular society... That wouldn't go very well.
No.
Not for very long.
Yeah, and just, like, even, like, cultural, like, I don't want to, I am going to, though. Some of this reeks of, like, just, like, racism. Oh, yeah, we can give Africa all of one.
That's because it is racism. It's Rowling.
It's like, oh, yeah, the United Kingdom, which, even at that, you know, there's a lot of troubles here, too. But it kind of works enough. It works well enough to say, you know, these countries are already under one government and the Republic of Ireland. Like, that works okay enough. But when you start saying, oh yeah, this, and this, it's like, hmm? Because also, like, when we think about world building, the only two governments I believe we've seen is the Ministry of Magic for the United Kingdom and the Ministry of Magic for the United States, North America, whatever.
Yep.
How does that work for the rest of them? Like,
yeah.
What do you say about the school that supposedly covers, like, all of the Baltic, the Balkans, Scandinavia, Germany, Greece, you know, Ukraine, Romania, and then there's just one that covers Russia? Like, some of these you can make sense of. Like, okay, the Japanese ministry handles the Japan one, the Russian ministry handles the Russian one, but then the ones that contain multiple countries, what are we doing?
Yeah, do they all have one government over the entire, like, multiple countries? Like,
And then he asks the question.
Durmstrong covers the Balkans in the 90s.
Right. Yeah.
In the aftermath of the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Which also brings into question, okay, so at one point there was two schools in the Soviet Union. Once again, yeah. It's not doing anything with real-world implications. It's just, this is what I think, because I'm very lazy.
Yep.
And then the final point is really, one we already talked about is the separation between the magical and muggle world, which is always sort of a struggle to me. Like,
yeah,
a lot of it just doesn't make sense. Like, even if you think about stuff like, who supplies these guys food? Or do they just magic food? If they can magic food, why haven't they solved world hunger? And that's sort of the problem. Like, it's like,
isn't food also one of the five exceptions to Gamp's law of elemental transfiguration?
Yeah.
I'll take your word for that.
But it's like, when we look at it, it's like, what? And it does come with, like, half-baked ideas, you know, lazy, or this is what I need it to be for this to work. You know, very little thought is put into a lot of ideas beyond the, this is what I need right now.
Yep.
And I don't want to deal with any implications beyond that. That is the end of the points.
And now I can't complain about Rowling anymore for the rest of the season. So for the listeners who hated that content, thank Dylan.
Ian, do we have anything in our mailbag for today?
Nothing from the audience today. So if you want to get in touch with us to either commiserate with us about our complaints or offer counterarguments, our email address is fanfictapes@gmail.com. You can also address your complaints to Maya on Twitter.
Maya, what is it? Our Twitter?
At fanfictiontapes on Twitter with a capital F and a capital P. I use that app sometimes. Usually when I'm traveling less than I have been the last month.
Jay, anything you would like to plug?
Honestly, usually you can find me on AO3 at AlphaJ071. I largely write sapphic fanfic. I haven't posted anything in a while, but I'm working on it. Give me a minute. but that's going to be about it.
So when you write sapphic fanfic, do you just state that a character is gay and then do nothing with it? Because that's what Rowling would do.
No.
I'd like to think we're all better writers than Rowling here. Like,
there is usually at least one girl kiss on screen, and if it's not kissing, then oh my god, the tension.
Oh my, how scandalous. Anyway, that has been the episode for this week. Everything Wrong with J.K. Rowling. I have been your host today, Dylan, and I was joined by...
My name is Maya. I'm f***ing hungry.
I'm Jay, and relieved that I finally got to get some of this off my chest.
And I'm Ian, and don't go anywhere f***ing hungry, because we've got another recording session right after this one. Until next time, bye.